Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 339. Jack Osa is with us, Osa Studio, winner of the 2020 Charette Venture Group Architecture Business Plan Competition. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all for free. Gusto, easy online payroll benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. And Monograph, the time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects. Jack Osa, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you here, Jack. Jack, you are the winner of the 2020 CVG, the Charette Venture Group Architecture Business Plan Competition. And that's where we met. That's how I've learned your story. And that's great. I love the competition. I think it's a very powerful program that Charette Venture Group does. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But I'm fascinated by your story. I really love your story. And I want to share your story with our audience. But before we get into where you started and where you are now and the type of work that you're doing, which is also really interesting, I want to just introduce you and then talk about your origin story. Jack Osa is an architect, designer, and a podcaster. He is the founder and principal of Osa Studio, an architecture and brand design firm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jack was born and raised in Columbia, South America, where he obtained an architecture degree. He is a first-generation immigrant, bilingual, and bicultural professional, always interested in exploring the intersection of business, creativity, and culture in order to become a catalyst for positive transformation. Jack, so that gives people just a little bit, a little tiny sliver of your story. I want to dive deeper. I want to go back to where you started, where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and then share that story to where we are today here at Charlotte, North Carolina.
Sure. Well, as you said, I was born in Colombia, South America, many, many years ago. And interesting story, when I graduated high school, my first inclination was to start with engineering school. So I started the engineering school and was there for about 6 months. Then I realized that, oh my God, what have I done? This is not what I thought this was gonna be. You know, since I was growing up, I was always very interested in like how things are put together and kind of like mechanics of things and understanding how things work. So, you know, in my mind, I thought that was very engineering-like.
Yeah.
But when I went to school, I realized, man, this is not for me.
What was it about engineering school that, you know, was clearly not your path?
It was extremely analytical and very rational. And I think it lacked a little bit of the design and artistic part of architecture. I didn't even know that I was going to find that in architecture. So one day when I was coming back from engineering school, I was kind of, you know, frustrated. I ran into a friend, and she was coming from her first year of university, and she showed me, she had a model in her hands, and I was like, what is that? I was very intrigued. And she's like, wait, it's a model then? And she started talking about architecture, and I was like, okay, that's it. That's what I want to do.
Light bulb over your head. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So it was interesting because, you know, I'm so thankful because I was able to go, you know, go talk to my parents because I was living with my parents and just say, you know, I'm sorry, this is not for me. I'm going to switch to architecture.
How did that conversation go with your parents? Were they?
It was very well. I was very, very surprised.
Yeah.
They said, hey, yeah, you know, that's okay. You tried. Let's start over again. You
did
know,
they, it was did they recognize that you were frustrated with engineering? Yeah. Did they know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure when you came home all enthusiastic and happy that you found a new path, they probably were relieved as parents.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It was interesting. So I talked to my friend, John, joined the same architecture school, and that's how everything started.
And then so you went through that school, you got a degree in architecture school in Colombia, and then what happens after that?
Well, I went to architecture school and, you know, during the whole, it was a 5-year degree. So during that process, it was very interesting, but because I felt that every year I was kind of discovering what really architecture was. You know, you would start with an idea, but then the more you get into the profession, you start understanding more layers and the depth of the profession, and you get, you know, more interested on other things. So I always look at, I was very interested in design, very interested in technicality. I realized that it really fit my, you know, how my mind works. I think I have a good balance between art and technique and, you know, understanding rationality and, you know, things that needs to be exact, but always having the ability to be more expressive or, you know, bring design on the artistic side of the things and into the profession. So, you know, I became in love with architecture in architecture school, started collecting books and reading magazines and looking at things. And I always was very impressed and interested in, you know, in big architects. And I look at a lot, like, you know, at that time I used to watch like these things about Zaha Hadid and Morphosis and Rick Owen Moss, and it was like all about deconstructivism.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I love these books. And you know, even at that time, they weren't even build projects. It was later on that they started building that kind of projects. And I really fell in love with the design and the depth of the thinking that they show. And I set my mind, I was like, well, I'm going to have to go to United States and be an architect. You know, Colombia has a really good history of very good architecture. It's very... very interesting because there was a point where Le Corbusier went to Colombia and he set a huge influence in modernism, and people became very passionate about modern architecture and evolving the quality and the theory of the practice. But I always like the idea of, you know, looking somewhere else. So I went to architecture school. I graduated and I started working for a small firm where we used to do a lot of like convenience stores in Colombia, but they all the standards were sent from United States. Mm-hmm. So part of my job was to kind of start translating, you know, English and inches to centimeters, and start kind of looking at how do we adapt the design to the local context. So that's where I've kind of got a little bit more understanding of the reality. And at that time, I've always been very passionate about technology. So I was like really good in AutoCAD, very fast with my drawings, always trying to make them really nice, good to read. And working with that firm, I set my mind to come to United States. And I told my parents that's what I wanted to do. And it just so happened that it was a time where the economic situation of the country wasn't, you know, very optimal for a new professional. And my younger brother was graduating from high school. And he said, well, I'll go with you to the United States. We can do it. So my dad gave us $2,000. I save about $1,500. And my younger brother and I came to the United States with $3,500.
Wow. And that the inspiration to go to the United States, was that a direct response from seeing those architects in those books and saying, if I want to do this type of architect, I need to be in the U.S.?
Yeah, it was part of that. I know for some reason I always thought I was going to go somewhere else. I think in the history of my family, like my parents, their parents, they grew up in the rural side, more countryside of Colombia. And then their generation was what they brought the next generation to the cities, mm-hmm. and kind of moving. And I felt like, you know, I was kind of always thinking, where is the next right. step for my generation to go to and explore?
Yeah. Do you feel that way now because you're a parent, right? You have kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way too? That are you sort of looking at that as, what's their next step? Where do they go from here?
Yeah. And I always try to talk to them about, you know, what are other things around here. Even they're still little, but you know, we'll take them to you know, New York City and Europe, and just showing them there's other things, there's other ways to explore and enjoy life.
Yeah. So you decide that you're going to move to the United States. You and your brother pack up $3,500 in your pocket.
Yeah.
Did you know that was not a lot of money at the time?
I had no idea.
Yeah, you're like, oh, we're good.
We're good, man.
Yeah, we got money in our pocket. We're going to the United States of America. We're good. So you're based in North Carolina. Is that where you landed? Is that where you
went? I landed in Atlanta, Georgia, because I have three cousins that they live there. So the ones that, you know, like were waiting for us at the airport. Yep. And we were there for about 2 weeks. And then I had another cousin that she was here in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we had a plan that we were going to kind of settle in Atlanta, but we wanted to come to Charlotte and visit our cousin just for a weekend to see how, you know, she was doing. And we came for a weekend and we never left. Since we saw the city first time, I was like, wow, this city is so beautiful. I think a big part of that was the contrast, you know, coming from Bogota, Colombia, which, you know, at that time the city may had about 9 million people.
Yeah.
So the environment is very close to New York City. It's very fast, dense. There is a lot of activity, very dynamic, and, you know, all the problems that comes with a big city, traffic, all those kind of things. And Charlotte, North Carolina still is, but even more when I came, it was very peaceful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of green, very open. And I think it kind of fit my personality. And I feel like, oh, wow, it just feels good to be here.
Yeah.
So with the $3,500, at that time it was about $3,200. we rented an apartment for 3 months. I paid 3 months of rent, and we bought a car for $1,000. We bought groceries. That was in winter, and we started just looking for jobs.
What? How old were you?
24.
And your brother was how old?
20.
So 20 and 24, moved to Charlotte. So, okay, this is where we're going to settle. And what year was that? How long ago was that?
2001.
2001. Okay, mm-hmm. so about 20 years ago, 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been coming to Charlotte. I've moved to Charlotte too, just for context. I moved to Charlotte last July. And so I agree with you. I love the city of Charlotte for all the reasons that you just described. Mm-hmm. Also coming from New York, just out of New York City, my city growing up was New York City. And so the contrast, everything right. that you just described, I love New York City with a passion, but I love Charlotte, that it's clean mm-hmm. and small and you can sort of take it all in one shot. Right.
Yeah.
And it's very design focused. There's a lot of mm-hmm. Focus on design there. And I really enjoy the environment here, and people are nice and friendly, and I love the weather. So there's the endorsement for Charlotte for anybody interested. So 24 years old, moved to Charlotte, $3,200 in your pocket, architecture degree in your portfolio. What do you do? What's
the
next step?
So, you know, the first thing is just, you know, find a job because you need to start paying bills because I rented an apartment and I found a job with another friend that he was living here that I met. He was Colombian as well. We started cleaning windows for home builders. When they finish the homes, you need to go clean the windows, you know, part of the final cleaning. So I was doing a lot of that. And my brother found a job in construction. And about 2 weeks into that, we found another job in a restaurant. It was a Cuban restaurant. And I started working there as a busboy because I didn't know enough English to be a waiter. So I was like, okay, let's be a busboy. So I didn't even know. I mean, and they said, you have the busboy job. And like, what is that? Like, what does that mean? And I'm like, oh my God, I had to clean all these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, was like very happy. You know, at that time, I felt that every time I took another step, I was closer to my dream. So, you know, I was very happy.
What was that ultimate goal? What was the dream?
To find my job as an architect.
Working for somebody else, or did you always know that you wanted to start your own?
I wanted to start my own firm. That's what I'm going to do. But I knew the first step, I needed to gain experience.
Right.
So I started working as a busboy, you know, making money to pay my bills, doing everything I needed to do. And during that time, when you come as an immigrant, the first time we came with tourist visas. You have like six, at that time, we had like 6 months to be in the country. And then when you need to leave, you know, it's like 6 months to be a tourist. So I had that time to understand, learn, and do all the paperwork to stay legally and work as an architect in the United States. So I had to contact lawyers and understand just the system on immigration, how things are. Then I found out I needed a working visa. And it's an H-1B visa. So I learned everything about that, see how things work. And what I started doing is I will have one day off in my job and I will wake up very early because I didn't have computer and I will go to the architecture firms. So at the restaurant I used to work at, I took the yellow pages, I ripped 3 pages off with all architecture firms and I will just show up. And I will just be there and say, hey, I'm looking for a job. And they're like, oh, okay, do you have a resume? I'm like, what is a resume?
Yeah.
So I found that out and like, okay, I need a resume and all this. What I did have is I had a good portfolio work, my school work, all the CAD work that I did when I was working down there. So I always had that with me. I mean, I was driving with that thing in my car. And at a small firm in here on South Boulevard, part of the south end of town, I went in there with my portfolio and saw somebody say, hey, I'm looking for a job. And he said, okay, what is that? You work? I'm like, yeah, okay, let me see it. So they kind of look at the work and they're like, oh, great, this is really nice. You know, we like it. Why don't you come back in a week for an interview? I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. And then I checked back with the lawyer to understand what we needed to do and said, yeah, we need a working visa. At that time, it was about $3,500, which I didn't have. And they need to fill up all this paperwork, you know, with immigration. They basically saying they're in charge of you in the country when you're here. And they need to sign it, you know, before the 6 months expire, because then you need to go back. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So you have to, I just want to clarify this. So you need to do a whole bunch of paperwork. You have to hire a lawyer. It costs $3,500. Then you have to take all that paperwork and get your employer to sign it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you need to get that job and then you need to convince them to sign the paperwork in order for you to be able to stay. So you have a bunch of many hoops to jump through, and you have to come up with $3,500 that you don't have, because all the money working as a busboy is going directly towards your expenses of paying rent and paying for gas and doing all the other things you need to do.
At that point, the clock was ticking. I was already like about 3 months in the country. And Now I had the formal interview, which my biggest sell, it was not only, you know, I not only need a job, but I need a sponsor for the visa, and I don't have the money. So it was a really hard sell, but you know, it was my chance.
So you brought that up right away. So not only am I looking
for... I had to do it. So I'm like, here, this is, and I even had the business card of the lawyer I talked to, say, hey, I talked to this person, this is what I need to do. So they told me, well, we really like you and we like the work. It's really nice. Honestly, we don't have how to check your references or anything. How about you come and we do like a test for 1 week where we give you some work and you do it with no compromise. You know, they say we'll pay you for that time. And we'll see what happens. So I say, okay, that's fine. So that was a crazy week for me because I'm you know, I wake up, go early, working kind of part-time there, you know, and I'm like, I feel like I'm touching my dream with my fingers. I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, it's almost here. And then I had to go work in the afternoon at that restaurant. Yeah. And I had to, you know, mop everything, clean the toilets. I had to do everything. So they gave me some AutoCAD work, you know, like basic things like, you know, can you do this floor plan in CAD? I'm like, sure. So I'm start working like a maniac. I mean, the computer was on fire because I'm like, this is my chance. So I worked, you know, at my best during that week, produce as much as I can. And they said, well, we're going to meet because they had three partners and we let you know. So I go back to my busboy job and then... About a week later, I had a call. It was directly from the lawyer that I talked to before saying, hey, this company contacted me. Just want to let you know they paid for your working visa. You start working next week.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to faint here. And, you know, I had that day and that call, I haven't impregnated in my mind, you know, where I was, everything, because the first thing I did was to call my mom. Because it felt so surreal. I'm like, you know, this kind of dream I had back there. And even here, I used to go to Uptown Charlotte, look at the buildings, look at the people. I'm like, wow, one day I'd like to be here and do these things. And to have it in my hand, it was amazing. It was a great thing for me to understand that, man, if you put in the work, you can do it. And now looking back, I realized there were many things that I didn't know. And I think they helped me.
And what you know, were they? What were
for example,
things?
Just basic information of the system, you know, coming from a whole different country. Like I didn't know much about like social security and credit and how things work and that you needed a resume, right? I was just the when I found that job, I walk in there and ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went in there like if somebody tells me no, you don't do it like that. You need a resume and you need to mail it and then you need to call. Maybe I wouldn't
right.
gotten that job.
By not knowing, you sort of pushed through the system. Mm-hmm. Right? That you didn't follow the system like everybody else did. So you differentiated yourself by walking into an office and talking to somebody and being inquisitive, right? You were asking questions and learning and being humble about the fact that you didn't know that kind of stuff. You went right to them and asked them about, you know, told them your story and told them that, you know, here's what I need. You know, I want to be a part of your firm. If you want me to be a part of your firm, here's what has to happen, you know? And so all those things as a young architect, you know, with big dreams, you just went after them.
Sure.
Yeah. What a great story. Yeah. So you get that call. Did you quit the other job right away? Sort of that day?
Yeah. Like, No, I never told anybody at the restaurant that I was an architect because I see no point in that. So I'm like, okay, I'm quitting. I'm going to start another job. And they're like, yeah, you're going to another restaurant. I'm like, no, I'm an architect. They're like, what? They didn't believe me.
That is funny.
They believe me like 3 weeks later, I took my bosses to eat there.
That's great.
So that was very interesting.
That must have been a fun meal.
Yeah.
To have your previous your fellow workers and your employers, you know, serve you and your boss is very that's great.
We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size your architecture firm. Arcat.com. Arcat is the online solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and much, much more from leading manufacturers from all over the world. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place, fast and easy. And best of all, it's free. Arcat doesn't charge you anything for these resources. You don't even need to register or give them your email. And when I say it's free, there's no catch. Visit arcat.com and try it out. Search for the resources that you need and Arcat will deliver. That's arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Arcat.com. Build better. Taking care of your employees has never been more important than now. For years, Gusto's been helping more than 100,000 small business owners run payroll, offer benefits, onboard new employees, and more. They call it the People Platform. And it doesn't just look nice, and it does look nice. It also works. Your payroll taxes are filed, deductions are calculated, and your team gets paid. You can even offer health insurance and 401ks as you grow. As a listener of the Entree Architect podcast, you will get 3 months free after your first payroll when you go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto. And make sure that you let them know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Gusto, the people platform. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. Are you tired of spreadsheets? Of using spreadsheets to keep track of your project plans, your budgets, your staff, your time? Spreadsheets. Our friends at Monograph know what that's like because they're architects too. They know all about that spreadsheet mess that you're dealing with. So they did something about it. Monograph is a time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects to respond to the challenges that small and medium-sized firms face on their quest to a profitable business. With Monograph's integrated suites of tools, you'll stay on track and on budget without the overhead of wrangling spreadsheets every day. Improve your firm's operations today. Try Monograph for free at entrearchitect.com/monograph. Ditch the spreadsheets. Visit entrearchitect.com/monograph and try Monograph today for free. Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So you worked for that firm. How long did you work for that firm?
I worked with them 4 years, and it was great. You know, I learned a lot. A medium-sized firm, but very diversified. There were like three partners, and each of them focusing on different project types. One was very focused on church work. Churches, the other one residential, and the other one commercial. So I got to learn, you know, wood framing, steel framing, restaurants, wood structures, concrete structures. And it got to the point where there was a time during the firm where I was the only person doing production for the three studios. So it was me doing work directly with the principals. So I learned everything. Yeah. There was nobody between me and them. So I will just get all the knowledge directly, you know, code, understanding how buildings are put together, you know, very focusing on understanding the technicality of architecture.
Were they transparent? Did they share the business side of their firm with you?
Not much. That was later on when I started, you know, and I didn't really care at that time.
Yeah.
It was later on that I started looking at like, okay, this is a business now. There are some things that I like to start learning more about that.
Yeah. So you were there for 4 years. What did you do after that firm? And why did you go? Why did you go to a different place?
So after that, there is a long parallel story, which is all the immigration part, because you know the working visa lasts 3 years and then you need to renew it another 3 years. So there's a long story. You know, by now I'm a US citizen, but there was a lot of things that made me wanted to stay there just to keep that status, because moving to a different company, that means that now they need to
start over
again. Yeah. But there was a point where I feel that I was kind of hitting ceiling in that firm. I was doing all the work, doing all the production. I was not very involved in the business side of the company, and kind of went out in the marketplace to look for something, and I got some really good offers. And I was like, wow, this is really nice. I think there is a lot that I can learn here. So I look at another firm, bigger firm, probably 4 times the size, and they made me a really good offer. Talk to them also about, you know, transferring the visa and stuff, and they say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. And I just went and talked to my previous bosses and say, well, I think I need the next step in my career, and these are the reasons. And they're amazing people. I really appreciate who they are. I'm still in touch with them today. I mean, we're doing projects together, and they were very gracious, you know, say, you know, we love to have you here, but you know, what you think is best for your future, however we can support you. So it was a very nice transition for me.
Yeah, that's good. That bridge was still there for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I moved to another firm where I worked with them about 4.5 years doing bigger projects, mainly focused on mixed-use developments, retail with residential above, parking decks, shopping centers, retail. And that was very interesting, just to kind of get on a more national level type of work and bigger scale of projects.
Right. So gaining lots of experience, starting with a smaller mid-sized firm, learning that side, all different types of architecture, then moving to a larger firm that does the mixed use, larger projects, getting lots of experience. And you were there for another 4 years, 4.5 years?
Yeah, I was there for about 4.5 years. And I was there during 2008. We all remember that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, the firm used to be about 45 people when I joined. And during the downturn, the firm went down to 6 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they slowly started laying people off. And they kept 3 architects, and I was one of the 3 they kept in there. And I think part of that was because, I really like the whole practice of architecture from, you know, the business side, marketing, sales, graphics, CA, you know, the everything that involves doing architecture. So I was very helpful for them because I could do a lot of, you know, marketing material. I could do renderings. I could do CA, construction documents. I knew about code. So I was always very helpful for them in that capacity. So during that time, they even cut our salaries back to the 3 architects we kept there. And we had a lot of days when I was, you know, I didn't have a lot of work to do. So I utilized that time to start working on my licensing here, because since my architecture degree is foreign, I never had to use a license because I was always working for somebody else. But I didn't like the fact that I couldn't call myself an architect because I was not a licensed architect. So I did all the research of what I needed to do. And, you know, first I had to translate and do all the transcripts of my education to United States standards, and that took me about 18 months because, you know, it's not only the grading system was different, but also the content of the classes might be different. And you could see one topic in another year or in another class with another name. So I had to create this huge matrix kind of explaining what goes where. And then finally, after the last submission, I only was required to do about 3 credits of English composition that I did in a community college here at night. And that will give me the equivalent of education, which is step 1. And then after that, you know, doing all the IDP stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So I did all that, took my test, and I became a licensed architect in 2010.
Okay. So about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and you were still with that larger firm at that point?
Yeah, I was with that firm, and then my wife was laid off also when that happened, and we got to the point where my wife wanted me to find a job. He said, you need to find another job. I'm like, how am I going to find another job?
So a second job. Keep this job, but a second job to bring in more money.
Or something better paid.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me just go online and just see what I find. So I started sending resumes, and I sent one here to the local Gensler office, and they called me, had an interview, and then, you know, it was like perfect timing. So I left the other firm and I started working at Gensler in 2010.
Okay. And Gensler, huge firm. So just moving up in sizes of firms. So one of the largest firms in the world. And so what did you do there?
So I started working in a big project they had here, corporate headquarters, about 250,000 square feet building. And they basically said, okay, this is your project. Have fun. I'm like, okay. So it was very interesting. I really loved the next step, because I was like learning and understanding, you know, how things work. So getting to understand how the firm works, how the systems work. I was just so excited and happy to be there and learn from, you know, from the best. So it was very interesting, learn a lot, starting getting a lot of traction, learning about the business of design, learning how they manage. I was always very curious about how they manage the firm, the size, the growth, the quality. And I started, you know, kind of getting better, understanding more, getting your promotion, your things. And I was there for about 6 years.
Were they pretty open with teaching you the business side of what they were doing?
Oh yeah, sure. I think that's part of the success of the firm.
Yeah.
You're always talking about the business of design. Every line that you draw costs money. Somebody's paying for it, and that money comes from somebody's pocket. So it's very interesting, because you're always understanding the business of design. And I think that was one of the things that most valuable things that I learned. And then I got to the point where, you know, I was very happy, you know, with my wife, my kids, having my career, getting promotions, you know, people stay at Gensler for years. And for some reason, I started feeling, you know, frustrated. I felt something and was like, man, what's going on? This is what I always wanted. I have it. How right. come I'm not happy? And when I realized I had kind of given up on having my own firm, just because I had such an amazing, you know, ride. I love all the progress that I've been getting in my life. But, you know, I couldn't deny it anymore. So I tried to kind of ignore it for maybe a couple of years, until got to the point where, you know, I talked to my wife. I said, you know, this is my dream. I know things are well, but this is what I wanted to do. So, you know, my wife, who's been my, you know, best supporter, she said, yeah, you have to do it. I believe in you. Do it, do it, do it. And I said, okay, let's make this happen. So in December 2016 is when I made the decision. And then I turned in my resignation my first day in January 2017. And I officially started Osso Studio in February 2017.
So about three years of going. Mm-hmm. So talk about, so that's a wild ride, first of all, to hear where you started and just sort of starting with $3,500 in your pocket and just dropping in Atlanta with your brother, working your way all the way through, going through all the barriers that you needed to go through, both with business and immigration. You have all these different pieces that you had to accomplish to get to where you are. Finally getting to a fantastic position with Gensler, one of the most successful firms in the world. And now, you know, giving that all up to start your own practice with full support of your wife and your family and following mm-hmm. your dreams. And I think a lot of architects who start their own firms have felt that feeling that, oh, I have everything, but I want my own thing. I want the control and the freedom to design and build my own life. And so you pull that trigger, 2017. And so what's happened since then? That's 3 years ago.
Well, that's been one of the, you know, best decisions I ever made in my life. I feel very, very happy, very fulfilled. The more time passed, the more I realized, why do I feel better, and how this decision means so much for me, you know, as a person and, you know, as a professional, how I have a bigger impact to others when they see that. And it's been really good. You know, these first 3 years, you know, the first concern when you do this kind of take this kind of risk is, okay, can I replace my salary?
Right.
You know, can I make a living without somebody giving me a paycheck? So, you know, I proved that now. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I can. It's possible. And, you know, that addiction to a paycheck that we all have, it's really hard to give up. But, you know, slowly I've been doing, you know, very simple things and just kind of doing my best. When I left, I just bought a new computer, got my my list of contacts, and I started calling people saying, you know, I started a firm. How can I help you? You know, every single person. And, you know, with the history that I had here working all those years with a lot of different people, I've known many different people in the industry, clients, you know, engineers, just related industry professionals. Everybody wants to help. When people see you taking a step of that caliber, everybody wants to help. And it was very good because it was like that. People started giving me little things here and there, one project, one little project, you know, all kinds, residential, commercial, you know, everything that I needed to do.
And your firm, you now do not only architecture, but you do brand design as well. And that's a prominent piece of what you do. Osa Studio is a multidisciplinary design studio. It does architecture and brand graphic work. How did that happen? Why the brand side?
It was very interesting because, as I mentioned before, I've always been very passionate not only about the technicality, production, and design, but also graphics, renderings in the architectural spectrum. So I always like brand design. I like, you know, I'm always following brand design firms, web design trends. I'm always very up to date on what's going on and communicating your brand through a computer to a website, how the flat world in design works. And one of the things that happened, it was while I was being an architect, you know how you get all these vendors that they come to you to show their products because, you know, they want you to have in their projects. It could be, you know, carpet-like fixtures, you know, roofing, anything you want. And I will see their business card and I'm like, oh my God, who designed this? You know, like they did not pay attention to their own branding. Or the brochure was kind of like, you know, not in the high-end design category. So I started to tell people, hey man, you know that if you improve your design quality, you're gonna appeal to us, which we are designers with your target customer, because we're specifying your product, you will get our attention. So I started helping people here and there, just kind of giving them advice until somebody, hey, can you design a logo for me? I'm like, sure. And I designed a logo. And then it got to the point where I taught myself how to build websites. And I started developing these packages focused on architectural vendors because I'm the target customer. I know what we like. I know what kind of aesthetic an architect is going to focus on. So I started developing business card logos, websites, and making money on the side, just having that side business. What was interesting it was that my target customer was coming to me. I wasn't looking for them. They were coming to sell me their products, and they would leave buying me design services. So I was like, okay, there is something here. And then I got more interested into not only, you know, how the graphics and the exterior of the brand works, but now the sales process, the value that you bring to the customer, helping them understand how we think. So when I started doing architecture on my own, and I started having conversations in the marketplace with, you know, general contractors, developers, brokers, people that are in the industry, and I brought up these conversations about branding, sales, they say, hey, can you do this for me? I'm like, sure. So I started work. I've done things like consulting for general contractors when they're going to interviews for big projects, because I've sat on the end where we evaluate the contractors. So I help them put together a unique story. Right? Because everybody comes to the presentation saying, we're the best. This is our history. We're going to be on time, budget, on a schedule. We're the best. But everybody's telling the same story. So I got into storytelling, you know, marketing, sales process. How do you be authentic? And it became a huge part of my business because it's within the industry. My clients are, you know, general contractors, product reps, other architects are my clients as well. I help them clarify their message in the marketplace. And that is becoming a really important thing that helps the brand of my own firm, where we bring that unique differentiator to the marketplace. That is not only adding another services or another service like design a website or a logo. I understand, you know, that's like the surface, but getting to a deeper understanding of what's the unique value you bring to the marketplace and how do you help your target customer understand that value in a very simple and clear way.
Are you providing that service integrated with architecture, or is it really two separate markets?
It's two separate markets, but not by design. I would love to do it together.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, one thing bleeds to the other side, and that's one of the things that I think it's evolving with the firm. It's, you know, how these two things integrated become more a design mindset, kind of a design thinking approach to problem solving. It's just the process is the same, but the execution is different. Is it two-dimensional or three-dimensional, or is messaging?
Right, right. And it really helps sort of diversify your work. So when architecture slows down, you have other types of work that potentially could help fill some of those gaps.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see how sometimes, you know, it really varies. Sometimes I get, you know, more than 50% architecture revenue, and sometimes it's more than 50% brand design consulting revenue.
Yeah, yeah. So what type of architecture do you do now?
Most of the work that I do is commercial office buildings, a lot of workplace interiors, just because of the network that I developed in the past is within that industry. We do some adaptive reuse projects. I've done a couple of restaurants and a little bit of residential. I like residential a lot in terms of building type, but in the market, it's hard to compete. There's some really good architects here, and you know, at the level that you really want to be good at it, it's you know, it's a market that I rather don't do.
Yeah, yeah. The residential, a high-end residential market in Charlotte is small, and it's very competitive. There's many, many really good architects out there doing that work. The majority of residential work in Charlotte is big developer stuff. So it's,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the majority of what's being built here. And so that market is really small. I love that you're sort of focusing on commercial. What's interesting about that market right now with COVID and this pause that we're having, I think when business comes back, that whole market is going to shift, and that I think there's going to be a really big uptick in redeveloping office space into new ways of working.
Yes.
I think you're going to be very well positioned for that, for not only doing that work, but to have that other type of branding side of it as well, to sort of build the systems that come along with that new way of working. It's going to be very interesting for architects in the next 5-10 years, really.
Sure. Yeah.
Fascinating story, Jack. I appreciate you coming by and taking a few minutes to tell your story. It's very inspiring to hear people who've come from, you know, ground zero, you know, working your way all the way up, literally with $3,500 in your pocket, all the way up to starting your own firm and being successful there. So you can see why Jack and OSA Studio was the winner of the Charette Venture Group architecture business plan competition. If you're interested in that, you should go to charettevg.com and go learn all about Charette Venture Group and the work that they're doing. They do that program every year, so look for it at the end of 2020 for the beginning of 2021 if you're interested in applying for that competition. His name is Jack Ossa, O-S-S-A, ossastudio.com is the website. He's all over social media, Instagram, LinkedIn. He also does a podcast. The podcast is called The Power of Design Podcast. You can hear about and learn about it at thepowerofdesignpodcast.com. And you can learn more about. So what do you talk about in the podcast, Jack?
So the podcast explores the intersection of architecture, construction, and real estate. The main purpose was to create a space where I invite all the players in charge of creating the built environment. So somebody needs to design it, somebody needs to build it, somebody needs to sell it, rent it, and do transactions. So it's been a very interesting experience. It's been a year since I started. I've learned so much because it's creating conversations with professionals that we work all the time together in the project environment, but we don't have a space to have deeper conversations about not only what we're doing, but about who we are. So the podcast is connecting those three areas of creating an environment and really powerful built environment.
Yeah, we'll have a link to that and everything else that Jack is doing at our show notes. The podcast, again, is thepowerofdesignpodcast.com. Jack, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you the one question that I ask everybody here at Entree Architect Podcast. What is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
What we can do today is to bring our design mindset into business. I think for some reason, we think design and business are different things, but they're not. I mean, it's the same brain thinking about proportions, alignments, function. We can use that same mindset and that same knowledge to apply it to design our business. I think that will be a breakthrough new discovery for many people when they realize you already have what it takes to create an amazing business. It's just need to flip the switch.
That's very good advice. Great mindset shift. I think people ought to pay attention to that because I agree with you, Jack. I think that business and the game of business is very much similar to what we do as architects every day. It just takes a mindset shift to focus on it and apply what you already know to your business. So fantastic suggestion.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 339 with Jack Ossa of Ossa Studio, winner of the Charette Venture Group Business Plan Competition, the Architecture Business Plan Competition. You can learn more about Charette Venture Group and the only architecture business plan competition that I know of in the entire world at CVG's website, charettevg.com. That's charettevg.com. You can learn all about Charette and what they're doing over there. Jack's story. Jack is so inspiring. His story is so inspiring to me. And stories like Jack's is why I love this podcast, why I keep doing this month after month, week after week, and why it keeps growing, why this podcast keeps growing month after month, week after week. Did you know, here's some stats, that the Entree Architect podcast has been downloaded more than 2 million times, probably closer to 3 million because there's a section at the very early, stage of the podcast where I lost a bunch of data. It's at least 2 million times. And this episode and episodes from the archive of more than 330 episodes, I think it's actually more than 340 episodes, they're downloaded more than 50,000 times every month, 50,000 downloads per month. Isn't that amazing? That's incredible. Like, I can't believe that. And that isn't because of me, that is because of you. Because you share each episode with a friend each week, and each week we grow. Slowly but surely, this podcast is growing to become the most listened to podcast for small firm entrepreneur architects in the world. And that's because of you. So thank you. Thank you for sharing the link to this episode, the episode every week. This episode, this week's episode is entrearchitect.com/episode339. So that is the link to share. Please go share that and we will continue to grow. Thank you. And before we head out here, I want to share one more link. I know there's lots of links. Every week, there's lots of links. So the link to share is entrearchitect.com/episode339. The next link that I want to share is entrearchitect.com/brandwebinar. Write that one down right now. entrearchitect.com/brandwebinar. That is the link to register for our free training with Jeff Eccles. Who's Jeff Eccles? If you don't know who Jeff Eccles is, you aren't listening. You're not an active member here at Entree Architect. Jeff is the host of the Build Your Brand podcast, which you should go over and listen to all 12 episodes, 13 episodes. There was actually just a bonus episode. Go listen to the entire podcast. He's the host of the Build Your Brand podcast. He's the creator. He's also your guide at the daily Context and Clarity live call, the video call every weekday inside the private Entree Architect community Facebook group. He posts a question. You answer the question and he has this
1 hour long live call every day inside the Facebook group. So if you're not a member of the group, entrearchitect.com/group. I know, another link. On Wednesday, September 9th, Jeff will be presenting two sessions. They're going to be the same webinar, two sessions, one at noon and one at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Noon Eastern time and 3 p.m. Eastern time on September 9th. He will present the Build Your Brand webinar. And he will share the simple to follow Build Your Brand framework and help you build your brand into something that your best clients will recognize, remember, and keep coming back to. So we're going to walk you through the process, the framework of the Build Your Brand process that we've created, that we teach in the workshop, that we've based the podcast on. We're going to do a webinar where we're going to share that framework and help you understand how to apply it to your architecture firm. So two webinars on September 9th, one at 12 noon, one at 3 p.m. Eastern, entrearchitect.com/brandwebinar, super easy to remember, entrearchitect.com/brandwebinar to reserve your seat. You have to register to join, so go join right now. Register for free at entrearchitect.com/brandwebinar. We hope to see you there. Be well, my friend. Be happy, be healthy, safe, and secure. And remember, the offer still stands. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, actually maybe a couple of months ago. If you need assistance, I know this stuff that's going on in the world is stressful, right? So if you need some assistance or you need just an ear to listen to, reach out to me. I mean, like literally, reach out to me, because we're here for you at Entree Architect. So if you need someone to listen, reach out to me. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening, my friend. We'll see you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.